Recording in progress.
Hey everyone, it's Michael Vandervoort and Robin Schooling, and we're back from our rather extended by work summer hiatus, and we're here on Drive Through HR. So it is September 20th, Friday morning. Robin, how are you doing?
I am good, and I feel very classy when we throw out the term hiatus.
I know it's like we stopped doing podcasts because we were really busy and wanted to take some time off, and then work got in the way, and we tried to do a show last week, and I had to, anyway, there's a whole backstory, but it's a hiatus, and hiatus is over. We're going to do a few more shows between now and the end of the year, and we'll probably be on once a week or so, I hope. But it's been a minute since you and I chatted. We just did a little catch up in the pre-show, but just in general for our listeners, how you been doing through the summer besides sweltering in Louisiana and Oklahoma?
Sweltering is really the key word because I was just thinking about this the other day. I look back at the summer and it was so freaking hot here all summer long that like we could hardly spend any time outside. I mean, we're big boating people, right? And we're out on the water generally every weekend when it's not. We, I think, have been out on the water maybe twice this summer because it has been just absolutely so beastly that even going out on the boat is not fun. Because, of course, when you're moving, it's fine. But when you
Yeah.
stop at the dock or you're going through a no wake zone or, and it's just, it just took all my joy out of summer. Now, the beauty part is it's great weather here. So in January, we can be on the water and it's fine. You just put a sweatshirt on. But when I look back on summer, I was like, well, we worked, we did a bit of yard reorganization and cleanup and painted the deck and things like that. But it's just been normal. It's been work. It wasn't even summer-esque.
Yeah, I don't want to get into the whole story. You know the story, but so I have it all, the Sugar, my beagle, who's 15 and a half years old, and so she's in at the end of times for a well-beloved and incredible dog, and I know that. I don't know that she knows that, and I'm not telling her. But I've really cut back intentionally on travel, both for pleasure and work. Basically, so I can stay home with my dog. I'm headed into, like I did a trip last week, and I have a couple more trips because it's the, conference season, and it's tough to stay away from everything for a whole year for your dog. But for me, the summer has been strange because I really haven't gone anywhere. So I've what is kind of cool though is I've hung around Tulsa and spent more time here, seeing some bands and
That's
stuff, and
neat.
kind of getting to know the city a little better. And one of the things when I moved here, like I had a couple personal goals. One was to like find a new vibe from, like a new lifestyle from my Florida lifestyle. And I've literally done that. But then also was to try to figure out how to make friends in my local area. 'Cause like I have tons of friends and acquaintances, but a lot of them live far away, and so I would, and even in Florida, I didn't have like a tight group. So, and it's funny, I've kind of, because I've been home and not traveling and been in the place that I live and spending time here, like primarily, I've actually built up a few decent friendships here in the area, which is not a strong skill set when you're 67 years old or whatever, how to make friends and meet people. And but I've done it, so I'm very I was I and I kind of it as I was thinking about summer and mortality and so on, that kind of developed that realization. Hadn't it kind of crept up on me. I didn't really, like wasn't like you go, okay, today I made a new friend, and make a mark on the wall or whatever,
I
So
hope
that's
I get a
my
Valentine.
summer. That's what I did with my hiatus. I made friends and didn't go anywhere, but it was apparently it was a good time. And Sugar and I still take walks for as long as she can go, so all is well. We have a relationship. It's not really a relationship. We've had a historic ties with another longstanding podcast in the HR space, which is our friends Trish Steed and Steve Bose over at HR Happy Hour. And of course, they have a massive network and do all kinds of shows under the HR Happy Hour umbrella. And really, I think Steve was like the first one. I don't know that he launched like the very first HR podcast, but they're celebrating their 15th anniversary of being on the air and producing shows, and we're not too far behind. We'll talk about that in a second, but I know we both wanted to send congratulations out to Trish and Steve on not only having a great show, but for having such a great, you know, successful period of longevity. So that's an amazing accomplishment.
Yeah. They asked me on to record an episode with them this summer as part of their anniversary celebration. Mm-hmm. They did several episodes marking 15 years. And so it was a fabulous call, and they just called it the HR Happy Hour OGs, right? And so it was Trish and Steve, and then Lance Hahn and Lois Melbourne, Lisa Rosendahl, and I, who joined them for an episode. And it was a lot of reminiscing and kind of remembering those old days. You know, HR Happy Hour and Drive Through HR launched before we even used the word podcast, right?
Right.
You know, so I mean, and both HR Happy Hour and Drive Through, we did the shows live, which
right, they were like call in AM radio, right. Call in talk shows.
Yep. And you know, so just thinking back to those days, because both of us did those and would take callers from outside, somebody could call up and be on the queue. And it was a more innocent time, I guess, but it was also kind of amusing because we, both HR Happy Hour and Drive Through HR, we started on the platform Blog Talk Radio, because of course that's why we all called it a radio show. And HR Happy Hour has also maintained, they still have their Blog Talk Radio platform, as does Drive Through. You know, that's sort of our primary platform. And as podcasting has evolved, because you and I have talked about this many times, we've stayed on that platform as kind of our home base, because we've got the, you know, thousands of episodes there.
Right.
And we don't want to lose that. So even though we're available and searchable on Spotify and, you know, Apple and whatnot, Blog Talk Radio is still sort of our home base with, you know, folks can go in and listen to an episode from, you know, 2010 if they want to, because
right.
It's all,
you can go back and find
there.
The original, you can go back and find the original show. I mean, it takes a little work, but you can find the original shows that Brian Wempen did. And there are even some unpublished shows, which maybe we should do like an outtakes episode someday. I don't know what's there. I've never listened to them, but it might be fun to go back and dig through those. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I'll bring up the website for Drive Through in a minute, which you put together this summer as one of your hiatus projects. But yeah, there are close to 1,700 episodes of Drive Through HR on Blog Talk Radio platform, and on that platform alone, we've had 900 and as of today, I looked, 940,274 downloads. Mm-hmm. And then as you mentioned, we've got a lot of listens and downloads on other platforms like Google, Apple, and Spotify. So we're, our episodes have been listened to hundreds of thousands of times, which is kind of wild and crazy, and not anything that I ever expect to have happen, but it's kind of cool. And we continue to get named. I know we're tooting our own horn here, but that's what you do when you have a host show. But we continue to get named to podcast lists and all that kind of stuff. So I guess, when I jumped in, you know, kind of back, I don't know, 10 years ago almost now, I didn't expect to still be doing this, nor did I expect to kind of be able to give back to the HR profession in the way we have. So
yeah.
I still consider this to be like a pleasure to do. It's a little bit tedious sometimes when you're trying to put together a show, and we were going to we were going to do a show with a guest today, and they're sick and had to cancel. So that'll show up sometime next week. But, you know, I still don't mind talking to you. So anyway, it's been a cool run. So tell us about the website.
Yeah. So we, you know, again, kind of to your point, right? We may have the fame, but we don't have the fortune or the support staff to do things for us. This is we're the equivalent of a garage band, right? putting together our own things. We finally, after almost 15 years, have a standalone website. So that's drivethroughhr.online. And that's sort of it's a repository for, you know, all things about the show. There's links in there to, obviously Blog Talk Radio, but there's also direct links to, iTunes and Spotify and where folks can listen there. We've got a little Meet the Hosts stories about you and I, we've got some mm-hmm. testimonials on there. And a little bit of a you know, history of the show, because I think that's important. And you and I say it all the time, and I always tell people the story of how Drive Through HR started, and I think what it still means to us. Mm-hmm. Which is, you know, it was the creation, it was the brainchild of Brian Wempen, who started the show, first show February 1st, 2010. And hosted that, you know, by himself for a number of years. Then William Tincup joined him. Then Nisha came in, and they had really three co-hosts for a while. And in amongst there, other people would fill in, you know, and that's kind of how we started. Right. Crystal and Dwayne came in, and then the four of us were co-hosts for a little period of time. And so it's really been a community driven show. You know, so a little shout out to the history of that, because I think that's, again, a similarity to HR Happy Hour in that it was started by folks who wanted to contribute something to the community, if you will. I love tossing around the community, but, you know, we have never, or very rarely, I should say, over, you know, every now and again, we've done some sort of sponsorship thing, but we don't. We do this as a passion project, for want of a better word, and keeping it alive for almost 15 years on shoestrings is part of that, and I hope that it goes down as something that's been valuable to folks over the years, over the 15 years almost of the show.
And like, having the website isn't to sell anything. It's just literally to, you know, for people to come to kind of help bring people together. And I'm reminded of, like, when we did what we called the quarantini episodes during COVID. I mean, we did 9 or 10 of those, and like, to me, that made a hell of a difference in how I was feeling, right? Mm-hmm. And just, you know, but also, like, talking to Tammy and Frank Zuko and John, Heather Bussing and John Sum, you know, just kind of making sure that people were okay. We talked a little HR, but we kind of held each other up. And I mean, this has been a big part of my life for the last 10 years. And mm-hmm. if you said passion play, we don't really want to make money off of it. I mean, I guess if somebody offered me $1 million, I wouldn't say no, but it's never been the driving goal. And it's not probably going to be, because it's a lot of work to try to figure out how to do that. But anyway, so our 15th anniversary will be in February. So we'll do something around that to celebrate it a little bit, and probably do some shows of our mm-hmm. own, and you know, we'll have more leading up to that. But let's talk. We've already chatted for 22 minutes here, and our show is supposed to be 30. So we've got a few HR topics of the week. So let's delve as ChatGPT or Chatty G, as I'm calling him these days. Chatty G would say, let's delve into a couple of these topics. So you sent a list over. So tee one of them up for us.
Yeah. Well, and this has been... you know, in the works for a while, but when I look back at sort of you know, this summer, it just has really been rising to the top in terms of something for HR folks and business folks and employees and everyone to pay attention to. And it's the decline, for want of a better word, of diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives, programs, although I hate the word programs, but the decline of DE&I in organizations and, you know, large organizations, Google, Meta, Zoom, you know, in 2023, last year came out and said, hey, yeah, we're cutting down on, you know, this buildup that we did with our DEI departments or leaders or whatnot. But then this summer, and it's been fascinating to watch from the outside looking in, there have been more companies that have publicly come out, including John Deere, Tractor Supply, Harley-Davidson, who came out and made public statements under potentially pressure campaigns from right-wing leading provocateurs, shall we say. But these organizations came out and said, yep, we're dialing back on DE&I. And here's what that's going to look like, you know, and we're going to either we're eliminating a department or we are no longer going to be sponsoring you know, pride parades or whatever that might look like. And you know, just kind of watching that at work has been very interesting. SHRM itself, you know, had to pop into the fray in the summer and shortly after their, you know, SHRM annual and make an announcement that they are removing the E from DE&I in anything that they talk about and just going to say diversity and inclusion. And so the shift in that has just it's fascinating. And it's, you know, how can you prop up inclusion and or diversity as a positive thing when you remove the underpinnings of equity and equitable treatment and things like that? So that's one thought. And it also gets me to the misunderstanding, the mischaracterization of what a DEI department, initiatives, leader, whatever you want to call it, what they do and what that stands for. Because everyone, every single person in an organization benefits from having an understanding and a focus and some clarity around how that organization is going to be inclusive, treat people equitably, and promote a diverse workforce. Because it, and I think you have some takes on this as well, but how DEI has become shorthand for race, really, and LGBTQ as well, but I think to a lesser extent than race. But think about all the other pieces that are underneath that, because your DE&I department office focus also deals with individuals with disabilities, and folks who may have you know, perhaps mental health issues or things like that. I mean, so there's much more there. You know, every employee in an organization benefits when there's a heightened awareness of what having an equitable and inclusive workplace means. And so it's
Yeah.
just it's frustrating.
Yeah, it is. I mean, we could do a week of shows on this and not cover the gamut of all the stuff that there is to talk about under this one topic, and you have 3 months. So I did, I mean, this isn't a pitch, but I did an episode of another show that I do at work called the Left to Bloom Show. We did a show last week that I'm going to post a little bit later this afternoon, hopefully, with an attorney from a firm called Seyfarth, and they have something called Cultural Transformation Task Force that they use, because they're so much business and so many legal questions arising around this topic and other things related to conflict in the work, you know, free speech and all these other things as we head to this, you know, very divisive and conflicted election. And we didn't even get into the last time we did a show, Trump was the nominee and now it's Kamala and, you know, all the craziness that's happened. It's, I mean, it's like, I can't, it's like, I don't even know what soap opera's on, you know, methadone or on heroin or something. It's crazy. Methamphetamines, I guess, because heroin, they'd all be asleep. But anyway, that aside, so a couple things. On the podcast that we did, this attorney that we interviewed, whose name is Don Soloway, talked about the fact that employers need a framework. And they need, you know, and I thought this was a great kind of very concise summary. I'm paraphrasing it, but they need a framework consistent with their values and culture. They kind of need to think about in the larger aspects, you know, not this like, oh, let's jump on the bandwagon. And then as soon as the heat gets turned up, let's jump off.
Yeah.
Because that's when you get yourself conflicted, right? Pick a position. You know, I think what she said was like, pick a position consistent with your values and understand that you might wind up taking some criticism, but be sure you're comfortable to kind of live with it. And then, you know, you kind of maybe can operate more fairly from there. I thought that was like that's a real boiling down of a lot of the stuff that she said. And I, you know, I'm not going to criticize these companies. I mean, they have their own reasons for doing what they did, but it's a problem for sure. And like, you know, we talked about the use of, like, I asked her, what are some of the most hot button topics? And one of the ones she pointed out is straight out of the election, the use of the term DEI hire to, by Republicans to describe Kamala Harris. She's a very accomplished woman, like with a, you know, a long, and I mean, there's been many other, you know, things that have been said on both sides, but that's just, you know, code for, she's a black woman who got her job without, you know, not having a credential or whatever.
Yeah.
And we'll see how that turns out. But this is a problem for employers. It's going to continue to be a problem for employers. The election is definitely not like the finish line. It's probably just the start. I dread I dread November 6th and see what happens. So I don't know. I mean, I got no real answers. Sherm taking the E out, I don't like that either. Don't really understand it other than it looks political. Like they're trying to remove themselves from the fray. And I mean, okay, I guess if that's what you want to do, but as a professional organization representing folks doing what we do doesn't speak to me of like standing up for your beliefs, but whatever, you know, I don't mean whatever. I just, again, I don't have any control or influence over what Sherm did, but it's it seems like a weak take to me.
Yes. So. Agreed. another hot button issue that again has been going on for a while, but this week got a boost in the headlines, and that is the drive to bring folks back to the office, return to the office. And we've certainly seen that going on, you know, since last year, especially last year. JP Morgan came back and said, you know, came out and said, hey, let's get folks back to the office. Disney moved to, hey, you know, 4 days per week in the office. Obviously, that doesn't include the Snow Whites and the Goofies and the Mickey Mouses because they're at the park every day, right? So we're talking the office workers, right? And then Amazon, this week, came out. This caused all sorts of headlines, going from 3 days per week in the office to now you will be in the office 5 days per week. Zoom, most ironic of all, I think, you know, not that long ago, a couple of months ago, came out and said, everybody back to the office 2 days, two times per week. And, you know, hello, we made our fortune on, you know, everybody starting to use Zoom. Really, during the pandemic, and now we're gonna and touting, you know, everyone can work remotely. Look, we've got the tools to work remotely, and they were having their folks come back in the office, and mandating that. But the Amazon one, back to full 5 days.
Yeah.
You know, they've stepped further out on that line than the ones that have come before. So of course a lot of the takes are, well, this is an easy way to get folks to resign. You know, maybe we need to do a reduction in force, and this is our way to kind of cull the herd voluntarily. And so that's why we're doing it. So there's the cynical take of that, but there's probably truth to it. But I think 5 days a week is just, you know, are we going back to the days of everybody doing that? I don't know.
I would say, I think there are at least two things I would say. One is we are at the end of a very long cycle of, if you want to call it power levels in the workplace, where the employees, in very atypical fashion, have enjoyed a higher level of power than the employers. Not universally, but it's like employers ha knew that if they pushed this envelope, they would lose people. Like in pandemic, post-pandemic, during the great resignation, all that stuff that we went through the last 2 or 3 years, right? That labor market has faded. People are now needing jobs, and inevitably power shifts, and inevitably whoever holds the power
Calls the
exercises more
shots.
control, right? Yeah, you know, and so I mean, is it fair? I don't know. Will it work? Like I was on I was on another call this week where somebody pointed out that like Bank of America did, you know, went back to, I don't know what the number was, but say 3 days a week, like a year ago, because they, you know, and they said, but, or 4 days a week or something like that. But they said, if you're in a Bank of America building on Monday or Friday, like there's nobody in the building, right? So they said it, they mandated it, but nobody really listened. And, you know, so they're, and they haven't been willing to go the next step, which is to drive the people out of the org, right? So it's, there's like a back and forth. The other thing I would say is like part of the problem that employers have in this aspect is when they needed us, you know, us being workers in general, to leave the building and go home and work because it was the only place we could work, that was fine. Right. And so people know that now, and they mostly have seen that you can do it. You know, the success probably rate varies organization to organization, but it's hard to put that genie back in the box. That contrasts with to the point you made at Disney, which is also true in manufacturing plants and for truck drivers and people that work in retail stores. There's a whole contingent of people who can't work from home, right? So there's you know, the employer side faces some issues with like, how come you can do it? You know, et cetera. You know, so they're like, it's fraught with problems. And the other thing that I would add is I was at an HR related conference for restaurant industry last week, and I saw the director, forget her title exactly, but she's the head of the Texas Restaurant Association. And she was talking about the economics of the industry in Texas, like, you know, how much people are spending it in restaurants versus grocery and all this kind of stuff. And one of the things they're tracking is like office occupancy rates in downtown areas because it's dramatically impacted the ability of restaurants to operate successfully. And so the restaurant industry behind the scenes is lobbying employers like, hey, get your people back in the office or otherwise we're, you know, we're going to go broke because we can't pay our bills, right? It's cost jobs. So there's all sorts of factors in play here, and it's going to continue to, I think, bounce around for a while. And Amazon might give some other companies cover to go back to 5 days, but that's not going to become universal for a while, in my opinion. Although I do think we'll be working more in offices and less from our, you know, private home offices for the foreseeable future.
But I think, you know, that's a and that restaurant example is a really good one. Get the folks back in the office so that we get the lunch traffic or the foot traffic at lunchtime, right, to come into our restaurant.
Happy hour
It's
after work, stopping
happy
in for
hour after
drinks.
work. But that it's you know, we're going through it right now, but 10 years from now, we're going to look back on it, and it's this societal shift of you know, when there's this great transition, right? It's when the car came in and the horse and buggy started to go out, but there were still cars on the road, or there were still horses and buggies on the road side by side with cars. And at some point, the horses and buggies went away and
Right.
cars stayed. And so, what is this? You know, what is this going to look like? And I think from the on the restaurant industry side, it becomes the rise of the ghost kitchens, so that this restaurant
Start
is
more
running.
drive-through business, less inside,
Right, right. And we're gonna, everybody's working at home or whatever, but we're doing lots of DoorDash deliveries and that sort of
The
stuff.
building
So
I live in,
it's,
there's drivers lining up in front of the building at dinner time. There's four or five different DoorDash drivers. They should figure out how to consolidate that to one run, and they would probably make more money. But anyway.
So it's interesting. It'll be, I think, like I said, 10 years from now, we'll look back and say, oh my gosh, remember those days when, we
The
did
good old
X,
days when
right?
we, the good old days of the pandemic when we could work from home. I hope we never
Right.
say that, but we might.
Ooh,
We have one more as
that's a
we're.
good segue line, actually. But because the last thing we want to talk about is the election, which you alluded to it earlier, that will probably really be the starting point again, right, for what's to come. And
True.
things that impact businesses, things that impact people, things that impact workers, et cetera. And trying to keep it middle of the road conversation, although I'm pretty straightforward with where my sympathies lie.
Same.
But what I find fascinating, since this is an HR show, and I want to pick your labor experienced brain. So this is a conversation, but a question really for you. What I've just been fascinated with, over this summer, as things have ramped up and and Biden left and Harris came in, and let's secure endorsements and that sort of thing. Both sides, even the one we historically don't think of as being particularly pro-worker or pro-labor, right? Both parties are trying to play to labor. And it's fascinating to me. And again, just this week, the Teamsters president saying, oh, we're not going to endorse anybody. And then individual Teamsters organizations in the states, I think it's up to, I don't know, 20 of them maybe by now,
Yeah, it's a
have
lot of
come out and
locals, a lot of
said
big
the
locals for sure.
that have said, well, we're gonna give our endorsement, to Harris. And it's just, it's interesting to me, and I'd be fascinated to be in the back rooms, right, when these things are going on, right? But and who's doing what? But
So a couple things. Labor has always been a traditional partner of the Democrats and law and order. Republicans, so the police, even though there are a lot of police associations are actually technically unions, they line up, they tend to follow Republicans, and so now you've got this weird situation with the police side, which I'm not going to go into other than to just state the fact, which is the police are endorsing Trump for the most part, who's been in court more than a lot of people in their lifetime here recently and is, has sentencing pending. So they're endorsing somebody that's been, found guilty of crimes
Priming.
versus somebody who was a prosecutor, but
Right.
that's a political endorsement. It's not a
Right.
what do we do for a living endorsement, I guess. So
Right.
that's one weird thing. And then the other thing is you've got like many Republicans, not just Trump and JD Vance, but others like Josh Hawley and some others that are kind of jumping up and trying to get labor's vote, which is weird, but I think that go ties both those tie back to the tightness of the election,
Yeah.
that it's such a narrow margin, that everybody's trying to hone in and get whatever votes. Like Trump
Yeah.
and Harris both have said, well, we'll cut out the wage tip, we won't
Yeah.
make you pay wage taxes on tips, right? Which
Yeah.
great, add
But
more
they have
money to.
different definitions of what tips mean.
And and whichever way they do it, if they take in less revenue, they're adding more money to the deficit, and so it's just like, it's robbing Peter to pay Paul, and again, politics, right?
Yep.
Trying to make a promise to somebody, whether you can deliver on it or not, that would, further their interest with them for this window of November 5th.
Yeah.
That's a big part of all this.
Yeah.
However, with the again going back, labor typically supports Democrats. And so we've seen, you know, almost all the major unions come in, you know, and endorse Harris. So that's very typical. The Teamsters have always been their own unique elephant. They have 1.2 million members. They have endorsed, I think they endorsed Richard Nixon. I mean, they've gone back and forth over the years. And then Sean O'Brien, who's kind of a, he's from Boston. He's, you know, he's been a, you know, I mean, you'd think he'd be a liberal guy, but he's playing politics. And the other thing is, so there's that. He's playing politics, trying to get the best, whatever, furthering the interests of his membership, I guess, you know, by getting
Secretary of Labor job.
Currying favor. Maybe. All of the last guy, Marty, whatever his name was, same, also from Boston. But they're trying to curry favor with both parties. But, you know, O'Brien spoke at the Republican National Convention. He kind of blasted some of the policies. So it was an odd fit.
Yeah.
He took a lot of heat for that. Somebody immediately announced they're going to stand for election against him in the next, you know, run for Teamster president. Jimmy Hoffa Jr.
Yes.
Jimmy Hoffa Jr. came out yesterday and blasted him. You know, so his predecessor that he replaced, you know, criticized him. The problem is with many unions, not just the Teamsters, but many unions, is there's a divide in the membership. UAW faces this. You know, they have like they have the union corporate union position, which is different than the leanings of the membership, right?
So
and the Teamsters in particular have a big divide, and they always have had for a number of years about politics, right? Truck drivers tend to be pretty conservative. They work a lot, you know, so there's like a lot of, they're not all truck drivers. I mean, many of them work in warehouses and stuff, but it's just a different animal. And so they lean heavily towards Trump, you know, if you look underneath, like, but anyway, long story short, O'Brien did a poll of his 1.2 million members, which was a sample of 21,000. And what they found, at least what I read yesterday, was initially when it was Biden versus Trump, the people that participated in the initial survey leaned towards Biden, which is a little bit surprising, but you know, it's kind of the way the, you know, 50-50 split. Then when they re-ran it because of Harris, you know, Biden dropping out, Harris coming in, Trump jumped way out. Like there's a much high number of people supporting Trump. And so what they did is, and the other thing was, allegedly O'Brien offered to speak at the Democratic National Convention and was denied. Mm-hmm. Like they didn't accept his offer. So there's a, you know, probably some ego there. So he said at the national level, you know, the international union is endorsing no one because we did this poll and our membership is split. And so we're, you know, and I don't know where that leaves them. It seems like they kind of played their hand and didn't get much out of it. But then, as you pointed out, immediately all these locals, you know, from big cities came jumping in saying, well, we're endorsing Harris. And I saw this morning, like a million Teamsters. The problem with that is there was no vote. There was no poll. There was no, it's just the local. So it's a political endorsement. It's not necessarily the view of the membership.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, but none of these represent like nobody polls like all your million members and then endorses based on a popularity vote. Right. So, so it's part of the political process. It represents a certain, you know, traditional relationship. It, you know, it's important to the politicians because it gives them those, you know, endorsements. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, I don't know how much. I mean, I think there's some behind the scenes political gifting and, you know, promises made and all that. Yes. Like you said, ambitions to Secretary of Labor or whatever. We see that in other professional organizations from time to time.
Sure.
Similar things might come up. But anyway, could be one of many. Anyway, it's a moment. You know, and it's not going to decide the election. Individual votes are, and then all the crap that's going to come after with the fake election claims and everything. So, but it is interesting to watch for sure from a political perspective.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Holy crap.
We've done a 45-minute episode, Robin, and still going. So we should probably call it quits here. But we probably got ourselves in trouble several times, but welcome back. Look forward to doing a few more shows with you in 2024. And then we'll be celebrating our own 15th anniversary, as you said, on February 1st of 2025. So somebody can throw us a party if you want. And if not, maybe we'll have one of our own, you know? So Anyway, thanks for doing this.
Thank you. What a great way to end the week and kick off the fall season.
Yeah, we'll see you folks down on the radio dial. Have a good week.
Bye.